So now we now is to compute this. And we will do this for isotropic media when we have only two material parameters and when this L minus 1 is presented in this form. I'll remind you that this modulus is responsible for compression behavior and this is for shear behavior. We recall that deviator of a tensor is constructed such that when we convert it with unit tensor, then we have zero, because if I convert this one with this, I have trace, and when I convert this with this, I have three. Therefore, it is zero. For now we represent this product which enters our Lagrangian and which in coordinate form can be presented like this. We write it as a sum of two parts, of the deviatorical part and trace part. Why? Due to this orthogonality, this cross term, when I will substitute sigma here in this form, and when I substitute sigma here in this form, then the deviatorical and spherical parts, their products are zero. Therefore, the whole lot is decomposed into the sum of these two squares. Now we want to compute the supremum. And about this guy I just told, and you see this part related to this one. And here we also write this product of strain and stress, playing on the fact that the deviatorical and spherical parts, they are orthogonal. So I can write here, decompose epsilon as deviator plus trace and this one, and then I will have this product. Let's accept von Mises yield condition, which says you that stresses must be such that this guy is less or equal than square root of 2 k star. So now, what I'm saying, that now this supremum, computation of this supremum, can be decomposed on two subproblems. One subproblem for the deviatorical part and one subproblem for the trace part. So this is problem one and this is problem two, because they are independent. If you want to, we can write here, represent this sigma as sigma deviator plus 1/3 trace, and we can operate with trace and with sigma deviator independently. Only we must pay into account that this sigma deviator is lesser or equal than this constant. So let's start with this one. In this subproblem, we need to find a function. This is a scalar function trace, such that this integral be maximized. And by elementary relations, which we derive from the maximality principle, if you differentiate, you have this one and put away this factor 3, and you have this. So you see that this trace sigma on which this maximum is attained will be this one. So when I substitute it here, and collect things, I have this one. So maximizing the first integral, I have quadratic part, which is simply squared divergence. Let us now proceed to another one. And here situation is more complicated, because here we had an unconstrained problem. and we can select it, this trace as we would like. But here we cannot, because here this sigma deviator belongs to some set. And we must consider two cases. In one case, when this restriction is not active, and in the second case, when it is active. And when we do this, so if this inequality is not active, if our minimum is obtained inside, then the minimality relation will be this one. But this can be only if this guy is less or equal than square root of 2k star, which imposes this condition on this epsilon deviator. And then, when I substitute this relation, this one, when I substitute into the integral here, then again I have quadratic function. And it will be this one. But then, what will be if this quantity is bigger than this one? Then maximum cannot be attained inside this domain, inside this set. It can be attained only on the boundary. And if we are on the boundary, we have this relation. So having this relation, one part of the functional, namely this one, is easy to define. We just squared this constant and we have it. But what will be with this product? And here we must argue as follows. We have a product. It is like a scalar product in a Hilbert space, and it is clear that it attains maximum when these two tensors are collinears. And this gives us an idea. Sorry. So this product is maximum when these two tensors are collinear. On the other hand, the modulus of this standard tensor must be this one. And from these two facts, we conclude that this maximizer must be this. Because if you take absolute value of this, you will have here absolute value and here absolute value, so this is 1. And it is exactly square root of 2k star. On the other hand, this vector, this tensor, has the same direction in the tensor space as this one. So their product will be maximum. So substituting this tensor in our second part, we have this. So we take this sigma d and put it here. This guy we know, and now we can calculate this one also. And then we have this one. So let us now join both parts of this function. And then we see that supremum of this product leads to this function. So if this variable, which stands for strain, is lesser than this constant, then our function is quadratic. But if it is bigger than this constant, then it will be linear. If you depict this function phi as a function of a real quantity, just of a scalar quantity, which is instead of this modulus, you will have this picture, which shows you that for small strains, this function is quadratic, and this reflects elastic behavior of a mediator. So somehow, if we would manage to solve our problem and find these strains, and then we can calculate whether or not it is bigger than this constant, and we immediately separate which points are in elasticity, which are in plasticity. But here, we have linear we have a fine function. We have linear growth, as they say. We have functional with linear growth, which is due to the fact that we applied on Mises yield criterion, which bounds one part of stresses. The whole problem then now comes in this form. So if you want, we wanted to have dual counterpart for the Haar-Karman variational functional. So now we made all the formalities and constructed this another functional, which is formulated not in terms of stresses, but in terms of displacements. And we see which structure it has. This part related to the behavior in the situation of compression is quadratic. But this part related to behavior of the media in the situation of shear stress, it is more complicated. It is first quadratic, but then it becomes linear. But anyway, this function is known, so in principle, we can apply some direct minimization method. So everything is known, omega is known, these constants are known, these external forces are known, so we can apply some discretization and try to minimize these functionals, and we find we compute strains, and by this law here, we separate plastic from elastic regions. But in reality, everything is not that simple, because it is not possible to prove in this formulation like this that this variational problem indeed has a minimizer. So this problem, as it is defined here, is mathematically incorrect. We will, not today, but later, because for discussing this, we need some more mathematical knowledge, but now I just mentioned that for this problem, we cannot apply this low semicontinuity variational technology as we did, for example, for linear elasticity. We cannot do this because this functional is not coercive on this space. If you remember, one of the conditions which were necessary to restrict minimizing sequence and says that our sequence is uniformly bounded was coercivity of the functional. So if we state it like this, then this functional is not coercive due to this thing, because when this variable is large, this guy grows not quadratically, it grows only linearly. Okay, one may say, you should not define this problem on such a space. You can take, for example, space W11. Mathematicians know what I mean. And if you take this, so it is the space of such functions which are L1 summable and have generalized derivatives summable in the space L1. Yeah? If, of course, I take such space, then this guy can be bounded from below by L1 norm of the deviator, and moreover this one. Or even I can make a space with non-homogeneous space with L2 norm for this part and L1 norm for this part. But then another problem comes out. Then such type spaces, they are not reflexive. And this is another requirement which was in this low semicontinuity principle, that the space must be reflexive, because only reflexive spaces possess this fine property that if you have a bounded sequence, you can extract weakly convergent sequence. If you are in non-reflexive spaces, then instead there is the Banach-Alaoglu theorem, which is nice, but which do not give us straightforward outcome from this situation. This is due to the fact that in principle, physically also, in this formulation contains a difficult point, which we probably discuss on the next lecture. But the subject was studied how to avoid this and how to extend to relax these problems in such a way that the problem is mathematically correct, but the lower bound is the same. This is also important. Of course, I can relax it. I say I will take some space like L2 or L1 or whatever, and will extend my functional somehow. And but if the lower bound is lost, if my relaxation lead to the fact that actually this is another problem, because if the lower bound is different, this is another problem, then this relaxation is not interesting. So there are two requirements. Make the problem correct and keep the original lower bound. But before going to this, it is timely to consider another bunch of problems which are somehow close and can be considered in a unified manner. To do this, I would like to shortly discuss some mathematical knowledge which we need. Well, first of all, you know that such type of functional is called the characteristic functional of the set. It is zero on the set and plus infinity otherwise. And this definition also is necessary if you want to operate in terms of convex analysis. We consider the so-called proper functionals, which are greater than minus infinity at all points and which are not plus infinity identically. Then these two characteristics of the convex functionals are widely used. This is the efficiency domain, the domain where our convex functional is bounded. And this one is the so-called supergraph or epigraph of a convex functional. It contains all such points of this space plus real variable. So it's this a little bit bigger space than V because it contains only also this real valued parameter. So this one. And now together with the space, with the Banach space V, we consider the space V star, which is the which contains all linear continuous functionals here. And the value of this functional on an element V, as usual, is defined by these brackets and is called the duality pairing. So this is a number which is computed that I have some linear functional. I substitute some argument, which is element of the primal space, and I have this number. All affine functionals then will have this form. And we need this definition. So now we consider the so-called dual functionals. We have this guy, which is defined in V. And we formally construct the functional which is defined in this space by computing supremum over all V of this complex. Such type functionals are called dual or conjugate for E and for this J, and they are widely used in continuum mechanics in models related to convex constitutive relations. If we should know that if J is smooth and increases at infinity faster than linear functions, then this G star can be called Legendre transform. Yeah. But consequent theory of this dual or conjugate functionals was created in the works of these scientists, and very often they are called conjugate in the Jung-Fenchel sense. Then we can construct the second conjugate. The second conjugate is based on the first conjugate, and symmetrically it should be an element of the original space V, because here supremum is taken over these elements which are in the space V star, and this chi plays as a linear functional, as a dual counterpart of this one. Just to make these formalities more observable, several examples. If we are in this space Rd, and then this is simply, yes, a product of vectors, and we have this guy is a matrix multiplied by vector, multiplied by another vector. Then it is very easy to show that this conjugate functional will be generated by inverse matrix of this one. Another example, which is usually discussed in this part, is that if we have this functional as the power growth function with the growth rate alpha, then if you make these formal computations, then you will have this conjugate functional, this one with the growth given by conjugate number. This fact can be extended to a more complicated situation when you have just functions of norms. So you have one functional, it is some phi of the norm of V. Then this this dual functional will be generated by function conjugate to this phi as a function of a real variable. But this norm will be replaced by this one. Now we want to recall matter about subdifferential. Subdifferentials are very necessary for the analysis of constitutive relations. The functional G is called subdifferentiable at a point V0 if there exists an affinity minorand L such that it is exact at the point V0, and if it is exact in at this point, then it can be presented like this. So from here it is clear that it is exact, because if V equals V0, these guys goes away and you have here L at V0 equals J at V0. But minorand means that this holds everywhere. So if at least one such type minorand exists, then the functional is subdifferentiable. Just think about situations when the functional is not subdifferentiable. How such a function could look like? Try to imagine. Of course, somebody of you know this very well, but maybe not all. Every such type element which is which satisfies this is the subgradient, and the collection of these elements creates the so-called subdifferential. And now we discuss important property of convex functionals which are subdifferentiable. Assume that our functional G has an element in this subdifferential. So there is at least one element inhabiting here. Then there exists an affine minorand like this. This is the definition. And on the other hand, we have this relation, where from we can extract alpha and substitute here. And when we do this, then we arrive at this formula, which says that the increment computed on a convex functional is always minorated from above by this quantity when we have an element of the subdifferential. This is the relation which we need. Also, we need this theorem, which is one of the most important in the analysis. We want to verify whether or not this element V star belongs to the set of subdifferentials. And this can be done algebraically. This theorem says you that assume that our functional is convex and subdifferentiable. Then the following two statements are equivalent. This complex is zero. This guy belongs to the set of subdifferentials of this one. And this guy is a subgradient of this one. These statements are equivalent. And now we will prove it. Assume that V star is a subgradient of G. Then we know, we just referred to this relation. And then they will hold this incremental formula, which we can rewrite. We now split this product and rewrite it in this form. Just look, I took one side here and this G here, and the other part left here. But V is fixed element, but W is not. This thing holds for any W in V. So when I wrote it like this, I can in the right-hand side of this inequality pass to supremum. And when I do this, I will obtain this dual functional. By definition, this supremum is this dual functional. So I conclude that this holds. Assume that V belongs to this. Then quite similarly, we can write the incremental relation like this. Again, I split this product like this, obtain here this part which contains W star and W star, take supremum, and I obtain second subdifferential. Conjugate functional. But if my functional is convex, then the second coincides with the original one. So this is G of I, V. Assume now that we have that this complex is zero, this V. We recall that this guy is presented like this. Then this zero will be bigger than this. And we rewrite this inequality like this, which shows you that then this guy is a one of subdifferentials. So this means that this guy belongs to this set. So these two relations are equivalent, but to say that sometimes verification of this fact is not that easy and more simple to operate with the first one. These type functionals, we call them compound functionals. This compound functional generated by G and this. They are useful in other cases. And now we can say that they possess the following important properties, that they are non-negative and they vanish if and only if these two guys which are sitting inside, they satisfy these relations. The last, maybe not the last, one more thing. This fact generates a collection of inequalities which can be called as generalizations of the Jung's inequality. So if I rewrite the fact that this D is always greater or equal to zero, then I have this one. So if I have product of two elements from two pairing spaces, well, for example, if I have here scalar product in a Hilbert space, I can estimate it from above by in many, many different ways. In one, whatever G I take here, then I calculate this conjugate, Jung-Fenchel conjugate, and I have inequality. So you can construct various inequalities using this formula. In particular, if I take this guy as this one and this guy as this one, then I have this, which is the classical Jung's inequality, known in analysis very well. But this is only a very special form of this one. Finally, I just mentioned that also in many cases it is useful to use Jonsson's inequality for convex functions, which says you that the value of the functional computed on an affine combination of these elements is lesser or equal than the sum. And this Jonsson inequality has an integral form which is used. Now we start only today. We cannot finish, but we only start. We start to apply this very fast background which I gave you to the theory which is called theory of superpotentials. So there is a class of models in continuum mechanics described by so-called superpotentials. Why super but not potentials? Potentials are usually this term is used when you are talking about differentiable case. So when you can define stresses by differentiation of some functional called potential. And here, the functions which we will use, they may not be differentiable in the standard classical sense, but they have subgradients, and therefore in some literature this theory is called theory of superpotentials. So the point is, the main point, that we can describe various media and various constitutive relations, but just defining one function, for example, psi, and saying that at every point our media behaves like this, that stress tensor sigma must be one of the subgradients lying inside this set. So this is a definition in terms of inclusions, in terms of set inclusions. We can alternatively, models, it is better to do it in the opposite way. Instead of this psi, we define this psi star, dual potential, and say that our media must be such that the strain belong to this, is one of subgradients computed on this sigma. And what we can show that if we accept these relations, then formally we can derive immediately two problems for strains and in terms of strains and displacements and in terms of stresses. Of course, we are doing this formally without not discussing such problems as existence. I just want to show you a formal way. So, yes, this is more or less what I already have said, that if these functions are Gattot differentiable, then of course we can then in this case this subgradient is unique. It is defined by simply these Gattot derivatives. So those relations are transformed to these, which might be more familiar for you. But maybe it is necessary to outline again that here, for example, stress is not unique. And this is the case for many nonlinear problems. You cannot uniquely define stress. You can say that if this strain is like this, then stresses belong to some set. And which particular in this set? This is a matter of, this is another story. But this relation gives you no way to identify it. Okay, so equivalently, we can define our constitutive relation by simply writing this, which somehow says you that the energy product is defined as a sum of these two conjugate functions. Due to the theorem which we just have proved, this is equivalent to saying that epsilon of u belongs to the subdifferential of this functional, or sigma belongs to subdifferential of this one. And now we will construct variational problem for displacements for a media which is subject to such type superpotential constitutive relation. So assume for, again, this is rather formal, assume that u is in H1, maybe it is even smooth function, it doesn't matter. And we have this strain tensor, and then we use convexity of psi. So if psi is convex and sigma is an element in is joined by this relation, then we have this. This is the incremental formula which we just have used. So in particular, we can, here psi is arbitrary, so in particular we can take it like this. And if we do this, then we have this. Yes? Where v is arbitrary function. Now we make definition. We define this integral over psi by capital psi, integrate this relation. We integrate this relation with respect to omega. And then we have this one. Of course, stress tensor in a media must satisfy equilibrium equations and boundary conditions. And therefore, we can represent this part as follows. We integrate by parts, and we have this one. And here, v is in this space. OK? So when we substitute it, we have this form. Psi, this energy function of epsilon of v, is bigger than this one plus this linear function. Now I adjust this f of v here, this f of v here, and I see that psi plus linear functional, which is the total functional of v, is bigger or equal and the same function of u, which gives you this variational principle. So in other words, we see that in this case, variational principle in terms of displacements for such type of media will be given by this function. So what it means practically? Assume that you have defined some constitutive relation. So you know this psi in this form. Then immediately, without any thinking, you have variational problem because you substitute it here and obtain the functional. I will stop here today. We continue next week.